The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, it's been almost 10 years since the Hutch-Kinahan feud began with the killing of Gary Hutch in Spain, and a new book chronicles the killings ordered by the Kinahan gang during the course of the feud, which claimed a total of 18 lives. Now, the authors of the new book, Kinahan Assassins, it's called, Stephen Breen and John Hand of the Irish Sun, are with me now. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we'll talk about the Kinahans moment, but I think more pressing, I suppose, is the breaking news about Gerry Hutch and what's happening to him in Lanzarote. He's going to be in court facing charges today.
Yeah, well, the latest is, yeah, he will be in court today, along with others he was arrested with on Wednesday as part of this money laundering investigation. So far, the actual specifics have yet to come out in terms of the investigation because there's a secrecy order on it in Spain. So we hope to know more later on today. Obviously, earlier in the week, we know his own home in Clontarf was raided here, and 10 other properties in Spain. So, we hope to know more later on today.
Now, it's more than him that's involved in this major investigation, and there are other things mentioned like trafficking, which may or may not involve him personally. Mm. But it looks like he could be in deep trouble here.
Yes, certainly. At this stage, it's allegations. And as I said, there's specifics we're not aware of. It is being led by Spanish police. So we just have to wait until later on today and for the details in this court.
Yes. All right, we'll get those details after that court appearance. But now we want to talk about your book, Kinahan Assassins, subtitled The Ruthless Hit Squads Who Brought Terror to Dublin Streets and How They Were Stopped, which I suppose is the good news. Stephen, the hit squads per se, who were the people typically they employed to do their dirty work?
Well, when the feud started and when the Kinahan organisation essentially went to war with the Hutch organised crime group, they recruited so many different individuals from all different types of backgrounds. They included people who were a British soldier, an MMA fighter, an Estonian hitman, Imre Arrakis. But also they exploited people who were vulnerable, people who were addicted to drugs and people who were recruited by the Kinahan organisation simply to pay off their drug debt and not involve taking human life.
Now, it's, I suppose, almost evident how you might do that. You might see someone who's vulnerable and someone who had some sort of a ruthless streak in them that they would, to save their own skin or write off a debt, would do something terrible. What about these international figures? How did they come across these? I mean, you can't go to the yellow pages metaphorically for these kind of things.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember, Pat, that when you're talking about the Kinahan crime organisation, you're talking about a transnational criminal organisation that has tentacles spread across the world, across Europe, South America, all over the world, and that's why they're a major target for law enforcement across the globe. And when this feud happened, I think that the Kinahan organisation called on their international contacts that they built up over the years. And one of those they recruited was Imre Arrakis, for example. And you're talking about a professional hitman, someone who had experience of organised crime, someone who fought against the Soviet regime, someone who was steeped in organised crime and had been linked to over 100 killings. So that was the experience that they recruited, and that was someone that they turned to continue their efforts against the Hutch gang.
Now, we heard about the determination by the Garda, the commissioner, to get at the gang and dismantle the gang. So how did they get insight into these hits and manage to foil some of them before they actually happened?
Well, I think at that time of the feud, the Gardaí needed to have a robust response to the threat that the Kinahan organisation posed. And one level of policing that they used at that time was to target the hit squads, so the people that they believed were willing to take up a gun for the Kinahan crime.
These would be the local people.
Yes, and so what the guards did on three different occasions was they used listening devices. They placed listening devices in the cars after they received intelligence that certain individuals were planning on killing people. So these investigations were life and death, essentially, because they were going over a period of 2 to 3 months, and the guards were monitoring their conversations. They got a good insight into the people they were dealing with, and then it culminated in when the guards were at a point where they had to make a decision where these individuals had accessed their firearms and were on their way to kill people, and that's when they moved in.
Just in time. But there were cases where innocent people died.
Of course, when you look at the early days of the feud, Martin O'Rourke, for example, John?
Yeah, Noel Duckhead Kerwin was another, an innocent 62-year-old granddad who appeared alongside Gerry Hutch at the funeral of his brother, Eddie Hutch, in late February 2016.
And that was the only thing that fingered him, yes, the presses at a funeral. Yeah.
And I suppose the relentlessness of the squad, the hit squad in that that particular murder, they followed him for up to eight weeks with the use of a tracker and followed his movements before they eventually struck. So there, the Gardaí had to match the gang in that way, that they had to access technology to get insights into the gangs in other situations and to get insights into their thinking, their mindset and what they were actually doing. And that's what the bugging devices in other cases was really helpful for in those situations.
Some of the others you chronicle having lost their lives inadvertently, for example, Trevor O'Neill. Tell me about him. Three kids, Dublin City Council worker, and he was in Spain.
Yeah, Pat, well, I interviewed Trevor's widow, Suzanne, and there's something that always resonates with me after interviewing her, and she said she didn't have to tell her children what had happened to their father because
they were there.
They were there. They witnessed it. And Trevor and his family were simply on holiday in Spain. A member of the Hutch family was in the same location they were staying in, and they happened to be walking past this member of the Hutch family, and then with a Kinahan contract killer was sent to Spain to target a member of that Hutch family member. And during that incident, Trevor O'Neill was shot in the back and lost his life. And I just remember speaking to his widow at her home in South Dublin, and they were so traumatised by what had happened and are still traumatised and just trying to rebuild their lives now. But it was absolutely horrific what they experienced.
There was another one, again, wrong place, wrong time, Martin O'Rourke.
Again, another man who was simply going about his business, someone who had his own problems with addiction, was building his life again, was set to go on a course. At that time, that was in April 2016, and he was simply walking in Sheriff Street when a Kinahan assassin opened fire, targeting another Hutch associate, and killed Martin O'Rourke instead.
I mean, the description of the city streets as really dangerous places for anyone to be simply caught in the crossfire. I mean, it's horrific, really. Maybe we became inured to it when it was happening.
But life was so meaningless to these hitmen. You got an insight into some of the conversations where it was just to go in and use firearms in such a reckless manner. In one situation, in one hit, the bugging device heard how one gunman was going to go in and say shoot a baby and a woman, a partner of this man they were targeting, and other insights, like they gave you insights into the overall Kinahan organisation in terms of Robert Brown and Gary Thompson were part of the hit team that were going to target Patsy Hutch, and they talked about the Kinahan organisation having people all over Europe to catch Jerry the Monk Hutch, who was on the run at the time. So they talked about having a hitman in Barcelona, in Belgium, and then reverted back to getting money themselves. So we'll get 15 grand out of this each, you know. And that was the thing about the Kinahan organisation. Their money was their power. And it eventually became meaningless. So at the start of this book, you had these kind of professional hitmen, but as Gardaí go along and take them out bit by bit, they turn to kind of lesser known criminals, lower rank guys. But it didn't matter anymore how much the Kinahans were willing to pay, because the Gardaí were there, they were listening, they were intervening in these hits.
And yet there were other people. Dean Johnson, 21-year-old, mistaken identity.
That was another one in West Dublin, and that's the individual suspected of killing him is the same individual suspected of killing Trevor O'Neill and Martin O'Rourke. So even though this individual had been widely believed to have murdered Dean Johnson, Martin O'Rourke, the Kinahan organisation still turned to him. They still sent him to Spain to target a member of the Hutch family, despite on previous occasions he'd murdered innocent people. So it shows you how desperate they were becoming. And that's an example of some of the people they were using to achieve their objectives.
Now, is the feud over?
I think there's always a threat of it. Like, these things are so personal, and simple things can actually spark the feud again. And there are people that are actually who have been jailed, and it's detailed in our book, that are back on the streets as well. So I think the Gardaí are always on alert and ready to, and keeping an eye on the situation. But as it stands, the Kinnan cartel are under a different level of pressure from law enforcement worldwide. You've seen your players in, like, the Kinnan cartel's number two, Bomber Kavanagh, who was actually based in Birmingham, had a key role in orchestrating the feud in Ireland, and he's locked up now for a very long time, a key pillar in the gang. Another one sentenced this week into a separate plot was Liam Byrne, another key pillar of the gang.
He'll be out by Christmas, though.
Yeah, I suppose, but every time they're hit, it destabilises the overall structure, which is essentially set up to protect the hierarchy of the gang.
Did Gerry Hodge have to pay money to sort out the feud, to take the target off his back?
Well, not the target off his back, but in the early days when Gerry Hodge, in 2014 and 2015, there was an attempt to kill Daniel Kinahan. But following that, negotiations took place, but Gerry Hodge wouldn't deal directly with Daniel Kinahan. He would only deal with Christy, the Dapper Don Kinahan, the guy who organised this whole criminal syndicate. And negotiations took place in different places in Spain. And money was handed over, 200 grand, as a way of saving Gerry Hutch's life. But
it seems like small potatoes for the Kinahans.
Absolutely, but the money was still paid, and there was a punishment shooting as well of one of the Hutch relatives to compensate for the attempt on Daniel Kinahan's life. But despite those agreements, despite the money being paid, Gerry Hutch still lost his life.
Now, where are we now? You mentioned that the Kinahans are under massive pressure and where they can flee to with all the money they have. I mean, there are options, but not very pleasant options.
No, the places they could end up in would be Russia, Iran, you know, countries which don't have many good close ties with the West at the moment. I think it's worth pointing out, and we do reflect this in the book, that the Kinahan organisation as it existed in 2016 and 2017 no longer exists because of the ongoing efforts by the Garda National Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau and their international partners, but also that the various hit squads who were taken out by the Gardaí. And we can see, and we show in the book, that there hasn't been a killing in the Kinahan-Hutch feud since 2018. And when an individual was convicted over the attempt to kill John Hutch, Vera Hutch said that the feud was over to her. But for the Kinahan organisation, the world's a small place, and they won't be able to have the same lavish lifestyle that they had in Dubai, perhaps if they go to Iran or Africa or somewhere like that. Mm. So it is worth watching to see what their next move is.
Money can buy you a lot of things, though.
That's true.
But the problem is, if you arrive in a place with a lot of money, there will be many people who want to take it from you.
People who want to take a slice of it, yeah.
The other aspect of that as well, obviously the world has gotten smaller since, but for instance, Sean McGovern wasn't able to return home for his own father's funeral. And his, again, a close associate earlier this year, Liam Rowe, died. And of course, James Shaws Byrne, the father of Liam and David Byrne. So the world is becoming a very smaller place for the gang, and smaller since this extradition treaty has been agreed with Dubai.
Now, we hear all the time about the need for more police, you know, to detect speeding on our roads, to police the inner city and so on, to stop random kind of antisocial behaviour. That's one end of the Garda that we hear about. But now, reading your book, it's all about a very sophisticated body of Gardaí who are combating this kind of crime. They seem to be well equipped and well adept at this.
I think it's a legacy of the feud was that obviously the Gardaí were caught cold in relation to the Regency Hotel when they didn't have the intelligence that that incident was going to take place. Since then, there has been a robust response by the Garda organisation to target the Kinahan crime group, because at that time, the Kinahan group, because of the amount of people that were being killed, the Kinahan group posed the threat to the state. So the state had to respond, and they did that by giving full resources to the Garda National Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau. And another element of that ongoing policing strategy was to build up stronger relationships with overseas police forces. And that's something that the former Assistant Commissioner, John O'Driscoll, did, who sadly passed away recently. His impetus and his strategy was to establish liaison officers in different parts of the world to coordinate the threat and to coordinate the investigations or to target the threat posed by the Kinahan group. And that's why we see people like the NCA, the Americans, Europol coming to Dublin with the one agenda of dismantling the Kinahan group.
Okay, so our Gardaí are well up to speed in this particular area.
I think they've proven that, you know, with the amount of success that they've had. They have jailed over 70 people related to the Kinahan organization. Senior figures within the Kinahan organization are now in prison as well. So it's the ultimate goal is seeing the figurehead, Daniel Kinahan, in prison. So that's what the agenda will continue to be.
Do any of them go straight after they emerge from prison? I mean, sentences are long and a lot of things happen in prison that might make them see the error of their ways. And we also know that Liam Byrne has pledged when he's out in relatively short order that he will live an exemplary life.
Yeah, well, I think in the case of Liam Byrne, he actually hadn't been too active in recent years, and particularly in the feud years, and hadn't come to attention. But it was actually Greenogue and the seizure of firearms in Greenogue and the identification of Declan Mr. Nobly Brady, and in turn of subsequent raids that got a 2-page document that brought that was given to the NCA and brought Liam or Thomas Bomber Kavanagh to their attention. And it actually brought them, brought Kavanagh up their pecking order, and in turn, Liam Byrne was over there at the time, and he went up their pecking order. So he was under pressure at the time because they knew who he was, and because even though there wasn't evidence about crime in recent years, they were on him when he did slip up. And I think that's a lot of this is a lot of these guys will find it hard. They're career criminals. To not turn back, but
yeah, I mean, what will they do if that's all they've ever done?
Yeah,
and it's a very lived ostensibly on the dole, but obviously funded by drug dealing and so on. So they come out of prison, and the dole is not going to keep them in the lifestyle to which they might want to be accustomed. Mm. So what are they going to do?
Well, there's one individual in the book that we refer to, Alan Wilson. Alan Wilson is a career criminal, heavily steeped in organised crime, and was in custody on another matter. And when he was released from prison, within 3 months, he was recruited by the Kinahan organisation to target a Hutch associate. But since he's been in prison, he's talking about how he regrets the day that he got involved with the Kinahan group. He claims they're now trying to kill him. And if you are part of this organisation, there often isn't a way out, because how are you going to get a normal job in society because of your criminal conviction? But, you know, the Kinahan organisation might be concerned about what you might know about them. So you'll always have that threat hanging over you. But I'm not aware of many of them who have gone to prison and then come back to lead normal lives.
Mm. All the characters with their nicknames and so on, are they nicknames imposed on them by the media, or is that how they know each other?
Well, like, for instance, Declan, Mr. Nobody Brady, when he was first found out to be living this double life and charged in relation to or held in relation to the Green Oak incident where the firearms cache was seized. We couldn't name him in the media, but that was the name given to him because he was living this double life. He was a truck driver, a legitimate businessman who seemed to have done well for himself. But on the other hand, he was actually the Kinahan cartel's head of logistics. So that was one name. And for instance, Rocket Man was given to Jonathan Harding because he was caught with a rocket launcher in the early 2000s. There's other examples too.
Do they rejoice in these names, or are these just handy handles for the media?
Well, if we look at another figure mentioned in the book, Fat Freddie Thompson. I think Fat Freddie Thompson was arrogant, had a huge ego, and lived in this persona that he was a hard man, he was violent, and he loved that monkeyer, Fat Freddie Thompson, and like some of the other names as well. Some have been given by the media, some themselves, like for example, Liam Bob Rowe, who recently passed away, he went by the name Bob. So when these guys are conversing, and even through the wiretaps that we hear, their own conversations, they're referring to their friends by their nicknames.
Yeah. Right.
Well, it's a fascinating book. It's called Kinahan Assassins, The Ruthless Hit Squads Who Brought Terror to Dublin Streets and How They Were Stopped. It's published by Sandy Cove, which is an imprint of Penguin Books. And its authors, Stephen Breen and John Hand, thank you both very much for joining us today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.